Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Zimbabwe's president gets a boost in power from his party. Ghanaian leaders call for an investigation into a drug smuggling scandal. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. The AFP News Service quotes Zimbabwe state media as saying the nation's ruling ZANU-PF party will amend its constitution to empower President Robert Mugabe to personally appoint all party Politburo members. The Herald newspaper says the move will prevent the development of multiple centers of power. That move comes as some leaders are angling to succeed the aging president. This from the AFP News Service. The United Nations Ebola mission in Sierra Leone says it will miss its target for ending the outbreak of the disease due to a shortage of hospital beds. UNMIR's so-called 70-70-60 strategy will unlikely meet its December 1st deadline, according to its manager, Amadou Kamara. The political opposition in Ghana wants an investigation into a drug smuggling scandal that has recently gained much public attention. The AFP reports that alleged drug trafficker Nayeli Amitafe was scheduled to appear in a British court today on charges that she smuggled 13 kilos of cocaine through an executive lounge at the Accra airport before flying on to London. She was arrested at Heathrow Airport November 9th. The incident has led to the arrest of three foreign ministry officials on suspicion of aiding the woman. It has also resulted in the firing of the leadership of the Narcotics Control Board. Opposition leader Oseke Mensah is calling for a bipartisan committee, which he hopes will investigate the ongoing case. This is VOA News. Nigeria's former president, Olusegun Obasanjo, is issuing criticism of current president Goodluck Jonathan's handling of the Boko Haram crisis, according to a report by the AFP. The former president says his successor has allowed the threat from the Islamist militants to escalate to gargantuan heights. Mr. Obasanjo recently called on President Jonathan not to seek re-election. An election is scheduled in Nigeria for 3 months from now. The Associated Press reports that a Nigerian parliamentary committee has issued a non-binding decision that the Shell Nigeria Oil Company should pay $3.6 billion for a 2011 oil spill. The spill occurred at the Bonga oil field when an underwater hose snapped as a tanker was loading crude at an offshore platform. Researchers say an experimental Ebola vaccine has caused no serious side effects and has produced an immune response in all 20 healthy volunteers who received it in an early-stage clinical trial. The New England Journal of Medicine says scientists will continue to follow the volunteers for another 48 weeks. The trial is aimed at determining the safety of the vaccine, which is produced by the British firm GlaxoSmithKline. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, has decided not to cut production. Meeting in Vienna, Austria today, OPEC oil ministers decided to maintain the present output target of 30 million barrels a day. World oil prices dropped to a four-year low after the news, reaching levels not seen since August of 2010. Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, says he supports a move to extend the Iranian nuclear talks. In a speech broadcast on television today, Khamenei said he does not oppose the seven-month extension for the same reason he has not opposed the talks themselves thus far. A large blast rocked the central district of the Afghan capital today. That was followed by gunfire in an area that houses many embassies and foreign compounds. Earlier, a suicide car bombing killed at least five people riding in a British embassy vehicle. Americans today are celebrating Thanksgiving, a holiday featuring family gatherings and turkey dinners. Thanksgiving is rooted in American history and commemorates a feast held by settlers and Indians in Massachusetts in 1621. The holiday is traditionally a time for giving thanks to God for the year's bounty. On the eve of the holiday, U.S. President Barack Obama and his family handed out food at a charity in Washington that provides food and clothing to the poor. Millions of people will watch the annual Macy's Day Parade taking place in New York City. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The International Committee of the Red Cross is appealing for a record $1.68 billion to help millions of people whose lives are torn apart by armed conflict and violence. The Swiss humanitarian agency says an explosion of conflict and violence, particularly in the Middle East and Africa, is threatening regional stability and putting development prospects of impoverished countries at risk.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from ICRC headquarters in Geneva. Details coming up. Also in the news, Cameroon is observing the annual United Nations 16 Days of Activism against Gender Violence. And there is encouraging news regarding Ebola vaccine research. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Douglas Mpuga sitting in for Sunny, music from Sierra Leone, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the Egyptian military is preparing for possible large demonstrations tomorrow by supporters of ousted President Mohamed Morsi. Another group, the Salafist Front, is expected to join the protests and call for Morsi's reinstatement and Sharia law. The protests come one day before the expected verdict of the retrial of former President Hosni Mubarak. He is accused of in the deaths of protesters during the uprising against his rule. Also, Egypt's cabinet has approved a new anti-terrorism bill. It's aimed at terrorist entities. They are defined as any group that damages the environment, communications, transportation, and public and private buildings, including places of worship and hospitals. Meanwhile, the group Human Rights Watch has called on the Egyptian government to take clear action to end the practice known as female genital mutilation. The group made the call after a father and a doctor were acquitted of charges they performed the procedure on a teenage girl who died last year. The Cameroon military has freed 16 hostages held by a rebel force operating in the Central African Republic. The hostages were held by the Democratic Front of the Central African People. It was formerly allied with the mostly Muslim Seleka rebels. One of those held was a Catholic priest from Poland who was captured on October 12th. The others were local civilians taken at about the same time. The rebels deny Cameroon troops freed the hostages. In a statement, they claim they voluntarily handed them over to the Cameroonians in an effort to win the release of one of their commanders. Cameroon is observing the annual United Nations 16 Days of Activism against Gender Violence, with this year's focus on the rights of widows. As Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé, many women who lose their husbands suffer humiliation and are forced to undergo dangerous traditional rituals to prove they didn't cause their husband's deaths.
26-year-old Marie-Noël Nanga lost her husband last year. She says, like other widows, she was forced to go through cruel traditional rites still practiced today in a Beti ethnic group.
Elle ne se lavait pas jusqu'à l'enterrement. Elle ne se couchait à même le sol.
She says a woman is not allowed to bath from the moment her husband dies until he is buried. She says some are forced to stay naked in their room with no food. This isolation can last for months. She says widows are punished as if they were responsible for their husbands dying. Cameroon has close to 300 ethnic groups and an abundance of customs and practices which are harsh to women. But they are staunchly defended in many communities here. Awemu Matu, notable of Bafut Chief's Palace in northwestern Cameroon, says the rationale for many traditional widowhood rites is to purify the widow of the bad luck brought about by her husband's death.
These are traditional practices that we inherited from our forefathers, that we must conserve them. We will never change them. And we'll make sure that our children keep on practicing them. A man has some different powers that was given by the ancestors. So the first person to consult traditionally is a man. You know, they say what a man can do, a woman can also do. But in our tradition, there are certain things that our ancestors kept that women cannot touch.
Educating traditional communities on the rights of women and how they can fit in with customs is a long process. Cameroon Minister of Women's Empowerment, Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ondua, says such traditions disrespect the woman and relegate them to secondary roles in the society from the time they are born.
We are in a country where our society is still deeply rooted into tradition. It's still endemic. It is normal to give a child to marry before she's even conceived. And that is a very bad practice, which does not permit the young child to go to school or to even become a normal adulthood, because when you are given away to get married before you are even born, what is your future?
Abena-Ondua says the government and activists are working to sensitize families with a variety of programs to help them understand that girls have the same rights as boys. She believes that with education from an early stage, such practices will be stopped within a generation. Cameroon is signatory of the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, adopted in 1979 by the UN General Assembly. The International Federation of Women Lawyers report that despite laws in place to protect women and criminalize acts of violence against them, including widowhood rituals, Cameroon, like many nations, fails to enforce the laws. Activists say along with education, there must be a political will at the highest levels to act. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
There is encouraging news regarding Ebola vaccine research. Dr. Anthony Fauci says results of phase one tests of an experimental Ebola vaccine are an unqualified success. Fauci is head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. The New England Journal of Medicine reported Fauci's reaction to tests of a GlaxoSmithKline vaccine that has been tested on 20 healthy volunteers in Washington, D.C. Volunteers produced immune responses that help to protect against the Ebola virus. In other Ebola-related news, the World Health Organization says only 20% of the people in Sierra Leone and Liberia who have Ebola virus disease are being treated in isolation centers. The WHO is revising an earlier prediction that the spread of the virus would be under control by December 1st. While numbers of new cases has been leveling off in Liberia and Guinea, that is not the case in Sierra Leone. Despite that, Sierra Leone's Ministry of Information spokesman Abassa Kamara says the government believes the number of Ebola cases has peaked and will show a downward trend soon. More than 2,600 people in the U.S. who recently returned from the three Ebola-stricken countries in West Africa have been virus-free for 1 month. All were monitored daily by local health officials for 3 weeks and show no signs of the disease. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention began the quarantine program after the death of a visiting Liberian at a Dallas, Texas hospital. Since the program began identifying West Africa travelers at five major U.S. airports is taking place. So far, no one has tested positive for the virus. Today, on Thanksgiving Day in the United States, Americans give thanks for their blessings. Among them is Bobby Smith from Germantown, Maryland, who immigrated to the U.S. 25 years ago from Sierra Leone. 3 years ago, to give back, Smith began a small volunteer organization called Hope for Lives in Sierra Leone to help the disadvantaged in his homeland, one of the poorest countries in the world. As we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, he began by providing fishing boats and is now sending medical supplies to help combat Ebola, which continues to devastate Sierra Leone.
Bobby Smith is packing medical supplies in boxes for shipment to the main hospital in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Among the items are gowns, masks, and gloves to help protect health workers treating Ebola patients. Smith has also been sending rolling beds and wheelchairs since the hospital didn't have any. His mission has become personal since two of his relatives in Sierra Leone have died from Ebola.
My people are dying. I'm just trying to help as much as I can.
Smith knows what it's like to save lives since he works on a surgical team at a Maryland hospital's trauma unit. Many of the items he ships home are donated by hospitals, including partial rolls of medical tape.
They use just a little bit of it. They don't want to reuse it, so they're just going to dump it.
Smith is being helped by volunteers at a Fairfax, Virginia warehouse belonging to the Brother's Brother Foundation, a U.S. charity that provides medical supplies to needy countries. Luke Hingson, president of the group, calls Smith inspirational.
He sees a problem and works to bring the best out of other people to solve the problem.
During the past 3 years, Smith has also jump-started other projects. Some fishermen in Sierra Leone didn't have boats, so using his own money plus donations, he bought 3 boats for them to share. His former primary school didn't have a library, so he helped build one and filled it with books. And when Smith sent over 4,000 pairs of donated shoes, he saw the eyes of school children light up.
It's like Christmas for them.
He has also handed out meals for homeless amputees living together in camps who lost their limbs during Sierra Leone's brutal 11-year-long civil war that ended in 2002. He met them at a beach where they were having fun in their otherwise difficult lives.
Because of the civil war, they got thousands of amputees without homes. Every Sunday, they have a group that comes in and plays soccer.
Smith says his organization is also helping the homeless make money.
We send tools for them to make a living because they can make pots and pans.
Smith says his efforts show that small projects can have big results, improving and saving lives.
You don't need a lot of money to help people overseas.
Hope for Lives in Sierra Leone is continuing to send medical supplies. Once the threat of Ebola has ended in Sierra Leone, the group plans to send a team of health workers from the U.S. to perform surgeries for free. Deborah Block, VOA News, Fairfax, Virginia.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The Egyptian military is preparing for possible large demonstrations tomorrow by supporters of ousted President Mohamed Morsi. Cameroon is observing the annual United Nations 16 Days of Activism against Gender Violence. And there is encouraging news regarding Ebola vaccine research. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The International Committee of the Red Cross is appealing for a record $1.68 billion to help millions of people whose lives are torn apart by armed conflict and violence. The Swiss humanitarian agency says an explosion of conflict and violence, particularly in the Middle East and Africa, is threatening regional stability and putting development prospects of impoverished countries at risk. Lisa Schlein reports from ICRC headquarters in Geneva.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says the nature of armed conflict is changing. ICRC President Peter Morris says new kinds of crises are emerging in new combinations, often with a regional dimension.
We are not anymore in a situation where we have a clear-cut international or internal armed conflicts with clear-cut front lines and positions unfolding in front of us. We see international armed conflict, internal armed conflict, criminal violence, intercommunal violence, superpositioning itself in the same context.
Morris says the conflict in Syria has long ceased to be a civil war. It has become a regional crisis engulfing Iraq, Lebanon, and Jordan. He says extremism is deepening some of the conflicts being waged, leading to increasingly violent behavior.
200,000 people have been killed since the beginning of the conflict in Syria. 9,200 civilians have been killed since the beginning of this year in Iraq. Syria and Iraq have become the epicenters of regional and global insecurities.
Syria is the largest ICRC operation, followed by South Sudan, Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Israel and the occupied territories, Mali, the Central African Republic, and Ukraine. ICRC President Mora says conflict and violence not only kills people, it kills development. He says it is sad to see how even modest progress, which has been made in some impoverished, conflict-ridden countries, has been destroyed. He says health systems, water and sanitation systems, and habitats are being disrupted by violence.
It's not limited, but exemplified with the conflict in the Middle East. But we see the same phenomenon in the Sahel. We see the same phenomenon in the Horn of Africa, with massive displacements and neighboring countries not coping with the number of displaced and therefore health, water, sanitation, housing systems disintegrating, states basically not capable anymore to deliver basic services to people.
Given the increasing dangers, the Red Cross says it plans to focus greater attention on the protection needs of people caught in conflict. But it says it will continue to give priority to health, particularly surgical care for the wounded. The Red Cross says it also will strengthen its response to sexual violence in places such as the Central African Republic, Central America, Colombia, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Lebanon, Mali, and South Sudan. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Sub-Saharan Africa's long-term food security faces a number of threats. A new report recommends speeding up agricultural productivity, but says a doubling of investment in research and development would be needed. The findings were released this week at the Forum for Agricultural Research Conference in Johannesburg. VOA's Jody Kapua has the story.
The report is called Taking Stock of National Agricultural R&D Capacity in Africa South of the Sahara. It lists high population growth, deteriorating soil conditions, climate change, and high prices as risk factors to food security. At the 2009 L'Aquila G8 Summit, leaders pledged their support for food security amid a global crisis that saw high prices and less access to food in many poor countries. In a joint statement, they said, there is an urgent need for decisive action to free humankind from hunger and poverty. Food security, nutrition, and sustainable agriculture must remain a priority issue on the political agenda. Gert Jan Stads is one of the authors of the new study and senior program manager with IFPRI, the International Food Policy Research Institute. He says since L'Aquila, investment in agriculture has improved.
Investments have definitely increased since then. There's been increased donor interest in agricultural research, but also, and more importantly, increased government interest, African government themselves, in increasing investments. Since the turn of the millennium, agricultural research investments actually increased by nearly 50% across Africa.
But that investment, he says, has been uneven.
If you actually look at the breakdown by country, you see that that growth is driven by just a handful of larger countries, and that many of the smaller countries are actually lagging behind, reporting no growth whatsoever, or in some cases even negative growth.
Nigeria, Ghana, Uganda, Tanzania, and Kenya are responsible for most of the growth in agricultural research in Africa. STAD says smaller countries that lag behind may have weaker economies and are not able to make the big investments that are needed.
Having said that, it's not like that every single small country is lagging behind. There are also examples of small countries where governments do recognize the importance of agricultural research. But generally speaking, we do find that the larger countries have reported larger growth and are really investing more than some of the smaller countries. And the problem is particularly severe in Francophone West Africa, where we found that many countries are really decreasing their research investments.
The donor investment surge that began in 2009 has waned somewhat as countries recover from the global financial crisis. The IFPRI official also says donor funds that were given could have been better spent by some African countries.
Areas that definitely need improvement are the actual cost of R&D programs. What we see in a lot of countries is that governments spend a lot purely on salaries of agricultural researchers, but not a lot on any of the required infrastructure upgrades or the actual research programs. In many countries, more than 80% of total government funding is actually going towards staff salaries, leaving hardly anything for actual research programs themselves.
But despite much of the money going towards salaries, the paychecks are small. So countries may not attract the best agricultural workers, or lose them to countries or institutions that pay well.
That's a very, very big reason for brain drain in African agricultural R&D, and that's definitely an issue that needs to be resolved by policymakers in those countries.
Another key finding in the report is that women scientists remain grossly underrepresented in agricultural research and development.
Majority of farmers in Africa are actually women, and female scientists are in a unique position to respond to the specific challenges that these female farmers. If you have a whole group of male scientists responding to the needs of female farmers, there's very often communication issues or cultural issues. Female farmers tend to trust female scientists more to explain their problems to, especially in certain countries that are very male-dominated.
The report adds that donor dependency and funding volatility remain critical in many countries. It says that may lead to only short-term goals being set that are not necessarily aligned with national or regional priorities. Stad says addressing these R&D challenges will be critical to enhancing future agricultural productivity. The report was produced by IFPRI's Agricultural Science and Technology Indicators Program. It's part of the Science Agenda for Agriculture in Africa that was launched at the Johannesburg Conference. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour. I'm the Voice of America.
The sounds of Africa, today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Sunday Shomari. Next on Let's Talk, Names in Africa. names in Africa is the topic we'll discuss in our new light-hearted show, Let's Talk. So join me, Sunday Shomari, and my guests as we explore names in Africa with some hilarity. That's Let's Talk, Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. The Egyptian military is preparing for possible large demonstrations tomorrow by supporters of ousted President Mohamed Morsi. Cameroon is observing the annual United Nations 16 Days of Activism against Gender Violence. And there is encouraging news regarding Ebola vaccine research. Coming up, music from Sierra Leone. And in our feature segment, an Islamic service conducted in one of America's best-known Christian churches helps send a message of interfaith harmony. I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports is next. Time now for the sunny side of sports with the mighty Douglas Mpuga sitting in for Sunny. Hello, Douglas.
Hello, your hairs.
Happy Thanksgiving Day.
Happy Thanksgiving, your hairs.
So, what is on the sports menu for this evening?
Quite a lot, your hairs, but we'll kick off with football.
Go ahead.
In Ghana, the national football team, the Black Stars, have a new coach, former Chelsea boss Avram Grant. The 59-year-old has signed a 27-month deal to take over from Maxwell Cornado, who had been in temporary charge since Kwasi Appiah left in September. He will start work on Monday, and his contract will finish at the end of February 2017, after that year's Africa Cup of Nations finals. Grant has only 6 weeks to prepare the Black Stars for the 2015 Nations Cup in Equatorial Guinea. Ghana, who topped their qualification group for next year's showpiece, will find out their opponents in Equatorial Guinea when the draw is made on December 3rd. The tournament will be held between January 17th and February 8th. Grant, who was Chelsea's boss, suffered a defeat by Manchester United in the 2008 European Champions League final, was most recently the technical director at Thaiside, Tero Sasana. Grant has international experience, having spent 4 years at the helm of Israel's national side. There's been concerns, though, that Grant, who is an Israeli, may find it difficult to gain access to some North African countries. Ghana Football Association President Kwesi Nyantechi was quoted by the BBC as saying that is an issue, but the two parties will deal with it. As a holder of an Israeli passport, Grant will not only be denied entry into North African countries, he will be denied entry into some Arab countries.
VOA! I encourage our VOA listeners with internet access to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is www.facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, www.facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
In athletics, 2014 Boston Marathon winner Meb Keflazighi was last week named the Athlete of the Year and honored with the Jesse Owens Award. The award is USATF's highest honor, presented annually to outstanding track and field performers. Along with Meb, Jenny Simpson also won the Jackie Joyner Casey Athletes of the Year. The Eritrean-born Meb Keflazighi became the first American man in 31 years to win the Boston Marathon in April. I reached Meb in San Diego, California. Congratulations, Meb.
Well, thanks, Doug. It's a great honor to be, same wavelength as the great Jesse Owens, and to be nominated or actually win the Athlete of the Year for the NSA track and field is huge. And with also Jenny Simpson, who is also the female version of the Jesse Owens, which is the Jackie Joyner Kersey Award. So among great company.
Yeah, this is a very great achievement. How do you feel?
Well, it's a great honor to be able to say, be called the Athlete of the Year, because the United States is such a great, the number one team. All disciplines, all different events is very strong. You have throwers, you have sprinters, you have jumpers, you have middle distance, long distance, and to be recognized because of my effort at winning the Boston Marathon and finishing fourth at the New York City Marathon, and to be named first time in 2000 in about 12 years, a marathoner to be Athlete of the Year is a huge, huge accomplishment. I feel proud and honored.
Yes, so as you say, you won the 2014 Boston Marathon, being the first American in 31 years. You won the 2009 New York City Marathon, again being the first American since 1982. What motivates you, Meb?
What motivates me is to get the best out of myself. I feel blessed to, I was born in Eritrea and came to Italy, lived in Italy for a year and a half, and then to the United States in 1987. I've been in the United States for 27 years now. And, I never was a runner when I was in Eritrea because of the opportunities, but my physical education class in seventh grade started all that my God-given talent that it was there, and I had great mentors and advisors to help me nurture that talent, and now stand with you, 27 years later, to still be motivated to get the best out of myself. And in the process, there's been a lot of great achievements. But this one, winning the Boston Marathon in 2014 and to be named the Athlete of the Year for United States Track and Field is such a huge honor. And, we all have different talents, different abilities, as long as we pursue our passion. And I feel that I have done that. And you never know. The future is not guaranteed, but you work the hardest and do the best that you can. And everything usually works for the best. And never thought I would be where I am at 39. Maybe, Jesse Owens Award, I was hoping to get it, potentially work hard to get it in 2005, 2006. But to do it almost 10 years later is just beyond my imagination. But it's all in God's time. And just do the best you can every time, and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, maybe as you say, you won the Boston Marathon almost when you're almost 39, beating the strongest field in the race history. Do you intend to continue competing? What are your future plans? Could you share?
Yeah, my future plan is I'm 39 now. Hopefully, about less than a year and a half now for the 2016 Olympic trials is in L.A. in 2016 in February. And I hope I'll be in good health and condition and see if I can make my fourth Olympic team. I've been very honored to represent the United States in three Olympic teams in 2000, 2004, where I also won silver medal after 28 years for the United States. And then Beijing Olympics, unfortunately, because I had pelvis fracture and I couldn't even walk, I have to crawl like a baby to move one place to another. But I worked very hard on therapy and came back and ran a personal best. I'm still running my best time ever, and made the 2012 Olympics, and now see if I can make one more Olympics in 2016. I'll be 41 if I'm fortunate enough to make the team.
Yes, lastly, Meb, what advice would you have for upcoming young athletes?
Well, my advice to young athletes or any person that is trying to achieve great things, things don't happen overnight. Success takes time, makes progress, and as long as you are working hard toward the goal, you need to have short-term goal, but also don't lose sight of what the big goal is, And for me, Beijing, I thought it was going to be my peak period to be able to perform my best and try to get another medal or gold medal, but you don't always get what you want. But don't give up on your passion and your dreams. And sometimes you can want it so bad you really want to achieve it, but there's going to be bumps on the road. But if you know that and down in your heart that you can believe you can achieve it, never have somebody tell you can't do it. And because you're the one that's doing the work day in, day out, and keep the faith and make progress, more progress, and to hopefully bigger goal.
Thanks, Meb. Meb and Jenny Simpson will receive the awards at a ceremony on December 4th in Anaheim, California, held in conjunction with the USTF annual meeting.
You want to listen to the latest African music? Just tune in to the African Beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays at exactly 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
African Beat. We love it. feel good.
But right now, you're listening to the sunny side of sports, so check it out.
Now on to Johannesburg, South Africa, where Daybreak Africa's Marco Ouma has more sports news, starting with basketball.
Tunisian teams got off to a winning start at the Africa Men's Basketball Club Champions Cup Zone 1 qualifiers in the capital Tunis on Wednesday. U.S. Monastir edged Algeria's CR Der El Beida 68-64. Then ES Rades dismissed Morocco's RI Tangier 81-58. Algeria's GS Petrolia outplayed Morocco's Chabab Rif Al Hoshelima 87-64. The Africa Zone 1 region includes Algeria, Libya, Morocco and Tunisia. In hockey news, Egyptian defending champion Shakir tackled Ghana's trustees in the men's contest at the Africa Club Hockey Championship in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe today, Thursday. Nigeria's police machine plays Zimbabwe's eradicators and Egypt's police engage Zimbabwe's Hippo Valley. In women's fixtures, Kenyan defending champions Orange Telkom play Nigeria's Heartland. Zimbabwe's Bulawayo Athletics Club face Malawi's Genetrix and Kenya's Strathmore University play Tanzania's Twende. Turning to football, Uganda is to host a two-day symposium from the 24th of January to plan a strategy for qualifying for the 2019 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon. The Uganda Football Federation head Moses Magogo disclosed in Kampala on Wednesday. Ugandan fans are distraught after failing at the last hurdle to qualify for the 2015 Nations Cup. This pattern of last-minute heartbreaking results have been the hallmark of Uganda's campaign in at least the last five consecutive AFCON qualifiers. Magogo revealed they have invited experts from Cape Verde Islands and Ghana to come and share their experiences in AFCON campaigns. Uganda last featured in the Nations Cup when they were runners-up to host Ghana in 1978. Finally, the Confederation of African Football revealed in Cairo, Egypt, that Marhaba is the name of the official match ball for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. The ball, which goes on sale at accredited Adidas retail stores across the continent next Monday, will be officially unveiled at the Nations Cup draws in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, next Wednesday.
Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thanks, Mark. And finally, Ghana has lost the appeal against the disqualification of their team from the 2015 Under-17 Championship. The Confederation of African Football has upheld the decision to penalize Ghana for fielding an overage player, Isaac Chum, against Cameroon in a qualifying match. Ghana won the 13th September first leg tie 2-1 and went on to record a 6-4 aggregate victory. But Cameroon protested and CAF disqualified Chum. As a result, Cameroon advanced to the finals. The Ghana Football Association has decided not to appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. And that's it for this edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Douglas Impoga. Now back to your house.
Thank you, Douglas. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Friday, Sunny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America. Coming up, a new play about Rwanda at a theater in New York. And next, an Islamic service conducted in one of America's best-known Christian churches helps to send a message of interfaith harmony. But first, some music. Here is Vicky Forna of Sierra Leone with Thank You. La, la.
To me, thank you. The carrying you showed to me.
together, we can live forever. Tell you thank you, where you make we embrace one another. Tell you thank you, where we should love to one another. I, it's only where you belong, you will stand strong.
And my family, I want to take this opportunity for tell una plenty, plenty thank you for una prayer and the love una showed to me during the time where I been get accident. I want to say thank you very much and God bless una. For all the love you showed to me,
thank you.
The caring you showed to me,
thank you.
For keeping me in your memories,
thank you.
Oh yeah, I said thank you. For showing me your love, thank you, thank you, thank you. For all the love you showed to me,
thank you.
The caring you showed to me,
thank you.
For keeping me in your memories,
thank you.
Sierra Leone's Vicky Forna with Thank You. 13 years before the 1994 genocide in Rwanda is the setting of a new play at Signature Theatre in New York City. It's called Our Lady of Cabello. Here's VOA's Caroline Weaver.
Our Lady of Cabello at Signature Theatre in New York is based on a real episode. In 1981, three young women at a Catholic boarding school in southern Rwanda began reporting visions of the Virgin Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ in Christian belief.
You just want attention, you silly, silly girl. You just want people to see you.
See me? No, I want you to see her, Natalie. Oh, I wish you could see what I see. No, what I know, no her. She wants to embrace us with the greatest love.
The girls said Mary urged prayer and repentance by all the world to avert a terrible war, and in one terrifying vision showed Rwanda's rivers streaming with blood and bodies littering the ground. To many Rwandans later, it seemed as if that vision foretold the Rwandan genocide of 1994. Playwright Katori Hall said she was 13 when she first learned about it.
And I remember standing in front of the television in my bedroom in Memphis, Tennessee, and seeing all these brown bodies floating down a river. And I was just struck by it. That particular vision imprinted itself on my mind, and it stayed with me. I was like, how did this happen? Why did this happen? Why are these people who look like me floating down a river?
It wasn't until many years later, when she traveled to Rwanda, that she heard of the visions at Cabello.
And I had always been wanting to write about that tumultuous, moment in history. And I was like, this is the perfect way, this is the perfect frame to do so. I didn't want to do the usual, during the genocide. I wanted to do something that was about the before.
The diocese is going to close Cabello College.
No!
Yes! But I like it here!
The play's cast includes a number of actors who are first or second generation immigrants from African countries. Joaquina Kalukango, whose parents are from Angola, plays one of the visionary schoolgirls.
I just like the fact that it's before the genocide. You get to see the life in the community of these people before the littlest things. You get hints of the tension.
Kalukango, who lost family members in the Angolan War, says acting in Our Lady of Cabello helped deepen her sense of what life demands.
You look at this play and you have to take a moment and with yourself and truly say, what are you going to do? What is your stance in the world? What do you believe? And what will be your standards? And what will you give? And will you show love? I think that's the beauty of this play. It allows you to confront those things head on.
Our Lady of Cabejo at New York Signature Theater runs through December 7th. Carolyn Weaver, VOA News, New York.
A group of Muslims were recently invited to worship at the National Cathedral in Washington. The hope was that an Islamic service in one of America's best-known churches would send a message of interfaith harmony to counter extremists' use of religion to justify hatred and strife. VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sakalvosky reports.
The call to prayer made it sound, and at times it even looked like a mosque, in the north transept where the service was held. Under the National Cathedral's Gothic arches, Reverend Gina Campbell welcomed worshipers by saying the shrine was
chartered by Congress to be a national cathedral, a house of prayer for all people.
Organizers chose this space so that worshipers could face east towards Mecca without seeing the cathedral's crosses and other Christian icons. In his khutbah, or sermon, South African Ambassador Ibrahim Rasool said tolerance works both ways.
That which we desire for ourselves by way of freedom of belief, freedom of worship, and freedom of conscience in the United States of America, we must desire for Christians and those of other faiths in the heartlands of Islam.
Rasool said he hopes someday non-Muslims will be able to pray in the world's greatest mosques.
Allahu Akbar.
I think that we must return to the Muslim prophetic tradition in which the Prophet, may peace be upon him, invited Christians into his own mosque that he established in Medina and to say to them, you can pray here.
Jesus Christ is our Lord and Savior.
Except for that one disruption,
Sami Allah. These
Muslims were able to perform their prayers in peace. Jerome Sokolovsky, VOA News, Washington.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
The first Thursday in November is a national day of Thanksgiving in the United States. The tradition is a very old one, dating to the arrival of the first English settlers in North America in the 17th century, who, after their first successful harvest, paused to celebrate their bounty and give thanks for surviving their first terrible winter in what was then a wilderness. Falling in the autumn, Thanksgiving has much in common with harvest holidays in other nations and cultures, such as Vietnam's Chung Tu celebration and Hamoo, the annual Yam Festival in Ghana. Still, with its turkey dinners, family gatherings, football games, and parades, there's something about the day that is distinctively American. Together with July 4th, when the United States marks its independence from Great Britain, it's a truly national holiday that includes all citizens in a common purpose, regardless of religious, political, or ethnic persuasion. It is also a time for people to look back at the year, take stock, and think about the future. With our nation dealing with crises in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and West Africa, the looming uncertainties of 2015 likely will be on many minds today. President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed the first official Thanksgiving amid similar serious circumstances, the American Civil War. But like their colonial ancestors, Americans are essentially an optimistic people. Surrounded by friends and family, today as in the past, they will enter into the spirit of the day, giving thanks for life's blessings and the promise of the future living in a free land.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello. I want to take a few moments to speak directly to you, the people of West Africa. On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your governments to help stop this disease. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives, and our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work, and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. On the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.